Thank you for listening to the Florida Community of Mindfulness's Dharma Talks. I'm Angela Parrish, Executive Director for FCM, and we're very happy to make these talks from our teacher, Fred Epsteiner, available to you. If you find this talk of benefit, please consider making a donation to support us so that we can continue to offer these recordings freely. You'll find a donation button on the talk section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. May you be happy and free from suffering.
So welcome, everyone. So that's an interesting verse that was just recited. Let the Sangha return to its breathing. Can we generate the energy of mindfulness together? You know, that invitation to return to our breathing, I mean, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because we're already here, right? I mean, so what does that mean, return to our breathing? Where have we been? And now we're returning to our breathing. Well, really where we've been in the world of ourself, where we mostly hang out. The world of ourself is our narrative of who I am and where I was born and all the things we've done and the kind of person I am and my views and my ideas and my beliefs. You know, all that's all the things we usually live in. And then we kind of bring that into every moment-to-moment experience. Right? All that moment-to-moment experience of our kind of long life drama of self shows up in our everyday moment-to-moment dramas, right? I mean, as I said an hour ago, there's really nothing going on here, but that doesn't mean just sitting there you couldn't create drama, have stories, have emotion, right? I mean, it's, right? But while that is certainly something to note, what the verse is getting, really hitting on, it is our encapsulation in this endless drama driven by myself, my story, my views, my way of looking at things, my interpretation of this, my spin on this. This is called the world of individuality, right? Now, what's the problem with that? Because the problem with that is that fundamental identification with our story, which is our opinion, our ideas, our moods, you know, is that we are then in our own little separate self bubble. So even though physically, like right today, we're fairly close in each other's physical space, aren't we? We may be kind of sitting next to somebody just 2-3 feet away or less, a foot away, who we have no idea who they are, right? So we're quite physically close with them. But we don't notice that, do we? Because we're where? We're in our little self bubble, right? Lost in our own thoughts. That is why we feel separate from the whole, disconnected from the whole. And that whole is not like, you know, the universe, nature, the world, right? Which is certainly true. But we're disconnected even to those we're sitting next to. Because we're not connected. We don't feel part of one body. We feel part of we feel part of one body, my body. But we don't feel part of the one body. Right? Is that clear? So the verse says, return to being mindful of your breath. Return to mindfulness of your breath. Because when we are all mindful of our breath and putting down our absorption in our endless self-created drama, we begin to have an experience that is very much the same as everybody else, right? We're returning to that place where we can share connection. We're all here practicing mindfulness of the breath and calming our minds. And when that happens, we actually begin to feel connected to other people. It's not like something we have to make happen. It's something that's already here. When we drop our story about who I am and who I'm not and who you are, right? And we return to mindfulness and awareness and just the simplicity of breathing. And then we, you know, the verse says, may we be free of this delusion of separation and selfhood. Like kind of, and then he goes on to say, and give it up. Superiority, inferiority, you know, give it all up. The whole world of just living from me. So we can feel ourselves part of one body. One Sangha body, one community body, one world body. Right? And when that happens, then very naturally, in the same way, hopefully we want only good things to happen to my body. Right? I want to take care of my body. I want my body to be healthy and happy and, you know. Oh, we feel connected to the one body, all bodies. So we naturally want the same good things for everyone. And then, you know, it's like the possibilities for kind of creating a healthy world begins to be possible when people feel connected, one body. Anyhow, so it's an interesting verse, by the way. So I thought I'd begin today, before talking about anything, I haven't really done this in a while, is just take questions. What this means is you're here, I'm here. This is a wonderful opportunity. If anybody has any questions about if you're brand new, about the practice, about your life, about meditation, about a spiritual path, about places in your life you're struggling, or how does Buddhism or meditation apply to this, right? So to me, this is really what's alive. Actually, this is the way the Buddha taught. And most of his teachings were in response to people's questions. So I can't say I'm the Buddha, but I can certainly say that's a very alive way of being with people. And most of us in our life, we don't have that opportunity to stop and to put it all down and just really look into our own life. You know, where am I stuck? Or where am I confused? Or what don't I understand here? And it can be, you know, simple things or profound things. And so this is not a time to be shy. Life is too sacred, and time is too short to be shy or embarrassed or want to look good. You know, you get hit by a bus, and where did all that get you? So, when you have a question, please put your hands like this. Yes.
So, talking about connection.
And just go, yeah, they're going to want me to repeat the question, so kind of give it to me in a pithy way, okay, so I can remember it.
I'll try.
Okay.
So, talking about what you just mentioned about connection, disconnection,
mm-hmm.
and closeness.
Mm-hmm.
But I notice that when I'm in my peer groups of the intensive, and, you know, we do still feels vulnerable, but it's so much easier. So I'm just curious how to extend it.
Okay, so I'll repeat it. So simply her question says, this connection and how she notices that going through life, she does kind of operate in a disconnected way to keep herself safe, right? To protect herself and all that. In some of the peer sharing groups in our community, you're feeling more comfortable and you found that you don't have to be that way. But then there's the rest of life. How does one take that into life? Is that right? What do you have to protect? I mean, I look at you, Paola. You look like a normal person. I mean, you've done a good job in fooling the rest of us. So, I look at you. You look like a normal person, right? You look like some, and I hear you talk. You have the capacity of talking. You have ears. You have the capacity of listening. So, this defect that you see within you, what is it that you are protecting, that you are hiding from life to protect? What actually is it? What?
I have no idea.
No, see, that's the wrong answer. Paola, you are what do you do for a living? All right, so that's frightening. Because if a patient came to you with all kinds of problems and they said, "Doctor, you know, what's wrong?" And you'd say, "Well, I have no idea." See, you would not stay in practice long, would you? Yeah, you right. So, you know, so this is important. If you're saying I've spent a life protecting something, staying hidden because there's some kind of vulnerability I have in me that's so painful and so fragile, I have to kind of tiptoe around life, right? Then I certainly would want to know what it is, wouldn't you? Right, so this is the first question, you know, that we have to ask. What, you know, I've built this great structure, but to protect what? To protect myself from what? I mean, what are you protecting yourself from? Have you ever been hurt in life? I mean, just a question. No, I'm asking you. So this is wonderful. So she says, "Oh, I know what I'm protecting myself. I'm protecting myself from being hurt." So I ask her, "Have you ever been hurt in life?" And she says, "Of course I have." And you've survived, obviously. So you've gotten hurt in life, and you've survived. It hasn't killed you, has it? No. I mean, it's just you've gotten hurt in life, right? And you've survived it, and you even looked around the room and go, "Isn't it normal?" Right? Looking for confirmation that you're not the only one, right? And people are going, "I mean, has anybody else ever been hurt in life?" Just so Paola doesn't think that she's the only one, okay? Now, I'm not saying that being hurt is like one of the fun experiences of life, right? But it's part of life, right? Okay, and we survive it, don't we? So you're protecting yourself from something that you have already experienced many times in your life, and you know it's not that big a deal, other than it's unpleasant for a while. Is that a reason to hide from being hurt? Well, I don't know. I mean, we're just having a little interchange, but these are things you've got to ask yourself. I mean, have you ever thought what happens in an auto accident? What happens? Like a bad one. Yeah, what happens in a bad accident? Yeah, it's painful, yeah. Or even just, hit you from behind, you get whiplash, right? So, have you stopped driving? Why not? there you go. I mean, there it is. It's light. Yeah. I mean, and we got to ask ourselves, why do I pick this out as if this is some unbearable pain in life that I must hide from ever experiencing again? And therefore, you twist and turn your natural capacity and your desire to be what? To be connected, to show up in a strong way. Do you see? So when I said earlier that meditation is ultimately about understanding our mind, right? And this is so important that we kind of ask ourselves these questions when we see these behaviors, you know, like the way, I mean, I like the way you said it, because you said it to me like this is a truth. You see? Right? I have, you know, I don't want to be vulnerable. I have to keep myself protected. Right? But you don't, do you, really? Do you? I mean, which would you rather be in life? Connected or disconnected? So you have to step out to find out. By the way, does every time you connect with anybody or anything, you've always been disappointed, betrayed? Oh, I thought maybe, you know, it could have happened. I mean, if you had stepped out 1,000 times and 1,000 times immediately this had happened, that I could understand why you're a little gun shy. But that's not true, is it? No, I would imagine it's, in terms of all your connections and events with people, it's a very small number where you've really been hurt. And yet, you know, you generalize like that's, you know, like the way I got to operate in my life. That's irrational. And it's painful. And it prevents you from living a full life. Is that? So it's important, you know, thank you for, but can you see it's important that we stop? I mean, and this room is full of people who are operating in life under things they developed decades ago. How to be in life, how not to be in life. And nobody ever kind of examines, you know, what is this? You know, what are these kind of belief systems that I'm running my life in? That's what I was saying in the mindfulness, you know, look into the mind. See what's there. I mean, vulnerability is a very popular word these days, right? No, nobody wants to be vulnerable anymore. Why not? I mean, give me a good reason for not being vulnerable, for being open. You want to avoid suffering. Well, you know, you could avoid suffering by not driving, right? But you choose to drive. I mean, that's a ridiculous answer. Because, no, the answer is, how can I go into the world which has the potential of suffering with a way of handling and transforming that suffering that arises, right? That's the answer. You know, many years ago, when I was a mental health people, I used to deal with people who had phobias. And you know how people would deal with phobias? Take a guess. Avoid it. It's very simple. You know, it's very simple. Right? I'm bridge phobic. I'll just keep driving, you know. And I used to know people. They would drive hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles all around, come in from the back, you know. And if, you know, oh, right. I would deal with people who were phobic about elevators. Get a lot of exercise. You know, always going up and downstairs and always checking out building, make sure, you know, them, you know, plane phobic people, you know, do a lot of driving. Right? Do I need to go on? I mean, that's how phobic people deal with their fears. They avoid as if their fear is real. Fears are not real because they exist where? In the mind. They're just thoughts. That's all they are. Right? I assure you, if we spent the next an hour with great visualization and great imagination, really looked at every terrible thing that could possibly happen to you on your drive home, when you opened your car door, you might feel a little anxious. Right? You might call an Uber or something. Well, my God. But of course, because then you have to trust air driving, which is part of the problem with plane phobic people, because they don't really trust the pilot. That's what scares the hell out of them. Somebody else is driving. Is that clear? I mean, this mind can fabricate anything. And so, as the person pointed out, yeah, because I think that somehow I am incapable of dealing with a hurt in life, I will just avoid. Wrong strategy. That only reifies our delusions and our dysfunctional way of living in life. Right? If that's the way you want to live, you're following the right program. And I understand, quite compassionately, that many people live that way because they really don't understand that. But in Buddhism, Buddhist psychology, everything arises because of causes and conditions. If we have phobias, if we have this, it's not because we were born that way. Nobody is born with a phobia. There are things that developed. Children actually, even though children are truly vulnerable because of, you know, their physicalness, their undevelopment of their mind, they tend to be very open and trusting. Can you believe it? Have you noticed that? Just very naturally. You know, they're just there in the world, right? With some kind of expectation that when they cry, somebody will come. They're not embarrassed to show their weakness, right? I don't want my mommy and daddy to think I'm needy. Right? You know, I don't want to show them that I need help. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm scared. No, children, when they're scared at night, what do? They call out, right? You know, they somehow have this crazy idea that the world is a good world. And people are there to take care of you and protect you, right? Isn't that wonderful? Why do we lose that? Why do we lose that? Simple truth of life. I mean, you all know the answer. Why do we lose that? Because something happens that challenges that sense of safety. And then because we're children, rather than going, well, the reason this person just disappointed me is that they're screwed up. Right? Which is a logical conclusion. Because no healthy person would do harm to a child, would they? So they have to have problems. Is that true? But we don't think that way. The child doesn't go, well, you know, they were probably abused by their parents, and you know what I mean? They had a tough life, and they're really doing their best, but they really don't know what they're doing. And you know, I only have about three or four more years of this, and I'll be able to get a... Right? I mean, can you see? That's really what's going on. But no, this child goes, I got to change my whole way of being in the world. Just because I had this one experience or this one person who's treated me this way, therefore I generalize and go, the whole world's dangerous. People are dangerous. You can't trust people. Do you see how distorted that is? And yet, this is what we do. And 10, 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years go by, and we still believe that stuff. And it's just an a false belief. It's not based on truth. It's not based on the facts of reality. And so it's very important that we see that our practice of mindfulness and introspection allows us to really heal and transform those places, because we want to understand that we basically, you see what's behind me, right? And when we bowed, we bowed to what? Not to this graven idol. What? We bow to the Buddha nature in all of us. Oh, that's my true nature. A whole nature. A complete nature. The source of all goodness. That's my true nature. Right? But we identify not with our true nature, our Buddha nature, our essential nature, the nature we were born with, that we came out of the womb with. We identify with what happened, right? We identify with the story of what happened. And each of us in this room, we're coming back to where we started, has a story, and that we constantly tell ourselves over and over again about ourselves, about life, and we're just endlessly reaffirming the same story. And it doesn't matter about reality, right? Because Paola, you don't mind me using you as a great example, right? Are you okay? If you're not, I'll stop. But you know what I mean? So yeah, see, Paola, you know, when somebody asks you the question, Paola, have every time you stepped out in life, have you been hurt and betrayed every time? And Paola says, no. And if I said, Paola, if you add up all the times you've stepped out in life and connected with people and situations, what percent was hurtful and painful? And you'd say what? 1%? Yeah. And yet you come with a story about how connecting is so hard for you, right? Because in your mind, that 1% has shrunk, has grown to like it's 90%. Right? Is that clear? What is the phrase in medicine, you know, when somebody really doesn't have a symptom, but they think they do? Psychosomatic, psychochondriac. What, it means what? It's all in their head, so to speak. They believe they have the symptom, but it's not true. Now, I don't want to mention anything about the group that's here today, but I think there's a lot of that going on. We think we have problems and illnesses that we don't have in reality. But just like somebody who has that disorder, they believe they do. And you want to hear something very interesting? When people who've researched psychogenic and psycho kind of symptoms, many people are so good at it, they actually develop the symptoms. Right? Which is fascinating. And they can develop some very serious symptoms of the disease that they think they have and believe so strongly they have. Over time, their body actually begins to kind of manifest those symptoms, even though they don't have the disease entity. That's the power of the mind. Now, most of us aren't that good. But in our own way, that's what we do. And so we go through life thinking there's something wrong with us. I mean, I wasn't making fun of Paola when I said, you look like a normal person to me. Right? You know, you look like a normal person. Where would this fear of connection and being vulnerable, you know, where is it? Because you can't see it. You look totally normal. Something I made up in here, some false belief I have. So again, mindfulness and meditation is about not just kind of calming our breath, ourselves on our breath. It's about waking up and being free. Free of what? Free of our suffering. What's causing me to suffer? It's these kinds of ideas, these kinds of beliefs, these kinds of mistaken. Is that clear? Thank you. Either, well, before we move on, you have a question about this? You have a question? Yeah, so just hold that. Anybody want to challenge what I just said? I'm serious. Yes, sir.
So I marched yesterday.
Yeah. What are those real fears, you mean? Oh, yeah.
So I'm interested to see how you...
Yeah, well, I marched yesterday too. And I was very inspired by the... It was really wonderful to see. They were all young people. A few of us old-timers, but it was young people. It was really very inspiring to, you know, by their intelligence and their fearlessness. It was really quite beautiful. Yeah, so I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this more internalized fear that we carry with us that really has no object, right? And that's very important. So I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not as if we go to the other extreme. Oh, there's nothing to be, you know, there really in life is nothing to be afraid of, or there's really in life nothing to be sad about, or there's really nothing in life ever to be angry about. There are, okay? But that's not what defeats us. That's not what cripples us, right? It is this endless drama that we repeat in our mind and that only creates afflictive emotion and has no discharge other than kind of to do harm to other, you know what I mean? We take it out on others. So I'm glad you brought that up, yeah. So that's not that. Yeah, let us save those things for reality. But in terms of how we conduct our life within ourselves, with those around us, yeah, I mean, unless you're living in a war zone and, you know, listening to some of the kids yesterday, it's very clear. Many kids in our country, if not in the world, live in a war zone. They feel they live in a war zone. Very sad. To hear children who talk about, you know, their schools, going to schools, their community, living with fear and living with loss, people being killed in schools. And now, you know, this idea that, you know, teachers are going to be armed. I mean, it's just frightening to these kids. It was so frightening to them. And it was just beautiful to hear them say to the adults, you know, your job is to protect us. Your job is to keep us safe. Stop passing laws and making requirements that make us less and less safe. And it was, anyhow, so thank you. Yes, sir.
Suppose that you were in a park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you said to them, yes, but it means much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Said, what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means they understand suffering exists, there's a way out of suffering,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, for an overture. And then they said, I'd like to sit down with you for about 10 minutes and have a cup of coffee and have you give me an elevator speech in a nutshell explaining to me exactly what Buddhism is.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to them?
Oh. So you're saying right here, right now, let's forget about that park analogy. Yeah.
So they're asking me to repeat the question. The person presents a dialogue between two people, or I was one of the people. Okay, so with these two people, one person says, "Hey, I thought Buddhism was all about just living in the present moment," and then my response is, "No, it's much more than that, such as the Four Noble Truths." And he says, "All right, you got 10 minutes. Tell me everything about Buddhism." was that your question? Okay, so yeah. So Buddhism is about being, well, what it's about. I mean, we might say ultimately Buddhism is about being a Buddha. What is a Buddha? A Buddha is a human being who is fully awake, fully enlightened. What does that mean? That means he or she is somebody who has no longer living from afflictive mind states at all. Gone. Someone whose mind states are only filled with positive emotionality. And that has come about because that individual, over many, 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 many activities, has freed themselves from identifying themselves as a separate self, but identifies themselves with everyone and everything. So we want to become awakened people. On the way to be an awakened person, we want to become a good person, a noble person, a kind person, a loving person, a wise person, intelligent person. Okay? So we want to become a certain kind of person on the way to becoming a fully manifesting Buddha. How do we do that? Well, we have to look at, why aren't I that way now? So we have to go through a process that we went through with Paula just now. We have to begin to look into what is causing me suffering. Well, I don't know how to do that work. Oh, got to develop mindfulness. Got to develop concentration. And you got to develop the tools of insight, which are how to look into your own mind. Okay? So that's what the Buddhist meditative path is about. The meditative path. Mindfulness, concentration, and insight. But it also includes, how do I conduct myself in life? Am I cultivating the wholesome? Am I not cultivating the unwholesome? In the activities of my body, speech, and mind. We got to look at that. Because the way I'm thinking, the words I'm speaking, and the way I'm acting physically in the world is conditioning my life. My happiness or unhappiness is not situational. My happiness or unhappiness is because of my mind. And when I understand that, I understand I need to cultivate wholesomeness and stop cultivating unwholesomeness. I got to start caring about other people. Right? When we're egocentric, the only suffering we care about is whose? Mine. I mean, that's a good place to begin, because that's most real to us. But we have to look around the world and go, everybody I love, my friends and the people I work with, and they suffer too. They're lost too. They're confused too. And then you look around the world, all the horrible things and beautiful things, but we were not here because of the beautiful things, are we? Beautiful things do have to be noticed and cultivated. But we're here because we suffer from so many things in life. And we don't know how to end it. So we find a spiritual path to follow and spiritual teachers to listen to. Right? So, there is a way, right? But it's much more beyond just living in the present moment. Donald Trump could live in the present moment. I mean, what I'm saying? It's about the kind of person you are. We live in the present moment so we can see what's going on in the present moment. And if it's a good present moment, we maintain it. If it's a bad present moment, we look into that and change it. I mean, mindfulness and living in the present moment is not passive.
It's a tool for waking up. But it's very hard for people in our culture to do that. We don't know how to do it. You see, we just know how to follow our thoughts, follow the crowd. You know, we have lost that capacity to be present to ourselves and to know what's going on inside ourselves, because we're endlessly just following thoughts, following our conditioning, following what's going on around us. You know, and when we don't feel good, and many people don't feel good at the end of the day, the end of the week, well, we've developed this endless capacity to numb ourselves or get ourselves high or distract ourselves or escape, right? Which never gets to, oh, the cause of my suffering is arising in my mind and nowhere else. If I just learn how to transform my mind and the actions of my body, speech, and mind, then I can be happy. But again, that's not what our culture has taught us, has it? And so that is why it's so important that if we are really kind of awakening to the reality of life and our condition in life, and we really want to change, to find a better way, to find a better way for ourselves, and to find a better way for our society, to find a better way for our children and the future of the planet, it behooves us to change. It begins with us. We can't wait for the world to change. We can't wait for everybody else to change. We have to be the ones who are willing to say, you know, the buck stops here. I want a nonviolent world. I have to be a nonviolent person. I want a world where people are not afraid of connecting. Then I have to become that person. I have to rid myself of my fears, my anxieties, my angers, my resentments, my judgments, my critical mind, you know, my despair, my hopelessness. You know, these are all the mind states that defeat me and defeat so many others. I want to help them. I want them to be free of these afflictive mind states. I want them to know a peaceful mind, a happy mind, a supportive mind. Well, how do I, you know, how does that happen? It begins with me. You can't sign a petition for that, you see? You can't demonstrate for that. You can't vote for that. Can you? You have to do the work yourself. And that's, again, in our culture, that's something we don't know about, do we? We know a lot about changing things out there or trying to change things out there. And yet we wonder why, when we put so much effort into changing things out there, voting this one in and voting that one out and changing this policy and changing that policy, you know what I mean? Which is all good stuff. But why does the world more or less stay the same? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Is there something I'm missing about how life unfolds in this world and what really is the cause of this world the way it is? And again, we are fortunate because there is this body of 2,600 years of wisdom and people looking deeply into life and looking into the mind and looking into all these questions. You see, while we've been very busy over here in the West inventing the light bulb, right, inventing the Model T car, you see, inventing computer, you know what I mean? I mean, like, we've been very busy over here, haven't we? You know, working very diligently and hard to change the material world. And I'm not saying that that hasn't brought benefits, you see what I'm saying? But that's what we've been consumed with, the material world, right? There's been another, fortunately, At the same time, there's been another whole bunch of human beings for thousands of years that have been looking at these deeper questions about the mind and human happiness and why do people suffer and the real psychology of the mind and the self and all that. Oh, I don't have to now go on a 2,600-year search for the meaning of life or how to do this, you know. I can just access this body of wisdom and practice. You know, I can just, you know, pop right into it, starting today, if I want. Well, that was more than 10 minutes, forgive me. But it wasn't too bad. I mean, it was close. So we have a few more minutes. Any other just think we, I mean, we've kind of gone off in certain directions, but yeah, so anything else simple, you know? Yes, sir. So again, I would say, so the question is, the gentleman says, I just want to let you know what goes on in my mind. This is not like, you know, thoughts coming and going. This is like a tsunami of thoughts. Anybody else experience that a little bit? All right. So do you have your answer? All right. No. Yeah, that's okay. So then, no, but that's very good. Okay, so that's okay. So this tsunami, which I wouldn't, that's maybe a little strong, okay? But one of the things we notice when we finally stop, right, is the activity of this mind, okay? And what you discover, to your embarrassment and your disappointment, you would have certainly liked a better mind, right? Yeah. Is this thing's out of control, right? It has a life of its own, right? I mean, you're sitting down, good guy, wanna kind of quiet and calm my mind, right? And your mind won't have anything to do with it, will it? It just. And again, it's a very common experience to think that, to have this sense. Once I started meditating, I have more thoughts than ever. No, that's not the case. It's just that you finally noticed what goes on all the time. Okay, and that's important to understand and understand that it is normal. Now, if I would say from traveling in Asia, and you know, I think it is symptomatic of our culture because of the incredible stimulation. You know, we're not pastoral people out there, you know, herding our yaks all day or, you know, working in the rice fields, you know what I'm saying, which is quiet, you know, so the environment is quieter, right? So I do believe that people didn't have all the same issues. Obviously, the Buddha, you know, was not born in a technologically advanced, you know what I'm saying? So I do believe there's a qualitative difference, but the general situation is the same, okay? But you're right, because of stimulation, right? I mean, we are stimulated from the time we get up in our culture to the time we go to bed. If you think what's going on, we're just stimulating thought endlessly, right? We wake up, we plug in nowadays, and we stay plugged in all day. And again, most of us do not have kind of manual labor, repetitive work, which is actually much more conducive to cultivating a concentrated mind. Many of us work in situations where, again, we're just dealing with information and numbers, and you know, so it's... So that it's constantly stimulated. So don't be disappointed, okay, that when you go to meditate, you know, that you don't have the mind you want, but you have the mind you have. And I would say to all of us, this is important that we begin where we're at. And this not liking where we're at, wishing we weren't where we're at, frustrated where we're at, disappointed where we're at, is it can be very injurious to one's development. Because one can easily get what? Frustrated. One can easily say, this is not for me. I mean, I just have such a, you know, I can't do this. Okay? But you can do it. Okay? But we have to begin. This is where we begin. Okay? Now, in my answer to the young man I met in the park a few minutes ago, you remember? Many of the things I said had nothing to do with meditation. Right? Meditation is very much part of the Buddhist transformative path, but it's not the key point. We're doing many other things to transform ourselves. For example, what is your name? Walter. So I'd say Walter, see, what you said was very good. I would just say in a different way. See, Walter could now say, since I started meditating, I have become mindful, I have become aware that I have many thoughts in my mind. And they just come and go, nonstop. Right? Okay. Now, Walter, being aware of his endless thoughts. Right? Now, try this, Walter. See? A lot of busyness over here, right? How can you get Walter not to be so busy? See, Walter now says to himself, breathing in, I am aware of my thoughts. Breathing out, I relax, I let go of my thoughts. Okay? The focus is here, Walter, not here. Right? See, this is the part, this is the aware part. Right? This is the mindful part. You're mindful of your thoughts. We're not trying to control the thoughts. We're trying to cultivate mindfulness. So if Walter sits there for a half an hour, very mindful of the coming and going, the passing of his thoughts, he's practicing mindfulness. And he will feel good. You see, but we don't practice mindfulness. What do? We jump in. You know, it's like jumping into the washing machine. You know? You know, don't blame me if you're dizzy, right? You know, you're supposed to put your dirty clothes in the washing machine, shut the door, you stay outside it, right? If somebody kind of missed that part in the directions, they'd wonder what. You see, our problem is not our thoughts. Our problem is we enter the world of thoughts and we get turned around by them, right? Yeah, you know, drama. We're endlessly, our mind are endlessly throwing up dramas. And we get this, and we get, right? And we think about this, and we, right? People watch the news, and like, bam, you know, it's like the news is happening on the screen. Right? But you know, people think just because they're exposed to something, they have to have an emotional response. Right? No, you don't. You just watch it, yeah. You know, right? The deluded people are just up to more delusion. What did you expect? That's what deluded people do. Right? Oh no, we got to have a whole drama. I can't believe they did this. Or I'm so angry. You know? Right? That's going on where? Now it's in here. And we're now the ones cultivating anger. Right? We don't have to, do we? So we can be aware of thoughts, we can be aware of feelings, positive or negative, but we learn to skillfully handle them and not enter their world and get twisted about. Is that Does that make sense to you? Yeah, so that's why, in a certain way, you hear when I give instruction, I say, first thing is relax, Walter. I don't say, you know, jump in there and change your thoughts. You see, I say, relax, Walter. Kind of open. Create space. You're mindful, you're aware. Right? It's like the sky, you know. We're not going to stop the birds from flying through it, are we? We're not going to stop the planes from flying through it. We're not going to stop the clouds from forming and reforming, right? Sky is spacious. It can all, you know, right? That's the kind of mind, that's what we're cultivating, mindfulness. But the emphasis is on mindfulness, not the object. That's why you can be mindful of anything. You can be mindful of a cup of tea. You can be mindful of what you're hearing, listening, smelling, tasting, thinking. It's mindfulness we're cultivating. Can you see the shift? You see, like you can just be listening to me, right? You know, and you're just hearing, right? You're hearing and seeing. You don't have to get bent out of shape, do you? You know what I'm saying? I mean, even if I said stuff that you totally disagree with, you could just, you know, you can be relaxed over there, do you? You see, you don't have to kind of, oh, see, people don't understand they have that freedom. Right? It's like monkey see, monkey do in this world. Freedom is, I can be present in the world, right? I can be open and present, show up to everything. Right? No barriers. I don't need protective screens. Don't need an AK-47, you know. Don't need a concealed weapon permit to show up in the world. Right? Respond to situations as they arise. No agenda. No expectations. Try that one out. What if you showed up in the world with no agenda, no expectations, and were just present to whatever was unfolding? And did your best to respond to whatever was unfolding with intelligence, with compassion, ease? How would that be? I wonder if we close our eyes for a minute. I'm glad the AC came on. It's a little warm in here. Just close your eyes and just imagine that for a minute. What if I showed up in the world, you know, with all the things I do, and I didn't have, and see, my name's Fred. Everybody here has their own name. So just say, if I didn't show up and give your name with, you know, my agenda every day. Of how the world was supposed to be and how the day is supposed to go and how people are supposed to be and people aren't supposed to be and what's supposed to happen and what's not supposed to happen. I mean, what if I didn't have any of that? I mean, I still had my schedule of the day. I mean, I still knew what I was doing. But that psychological, that mental filter of agenda, my agenda, which again, nobody knows, you see. It's your own little private agenda of how the day is supposed to go, how people are supposed to treat me. What if you didn't have that at all? If you sat down at your meditation, as Walter was saying, instead of just having an agenda of how my meditation is supposed to go, you just sat down and you just practiced, did your best. It doesn't mean you don't have kind of qualities that you're cultivating, positive qualities, not wanting to have negative qualities. And then that's really all you were focused on. But the way the day unfolded was you just kind of let the day unfold. You let people be who they are. You let the world be what it is. How would that be? How would you be? How would you feel? How would your day go? Can you even imagine that? Or are you having trouble even imagining that? What if I gave up Fred's agenda? Can you just give it your name? How would that be? Do I really need my own personal secret agenda every day for every person in every situation to be happy? Or is that actually the source of my suffering? Just ask yourself that. Perhaps it feels a little scary or naked letting go of your hidden agenda for every day. Every person, every situation. Talk about feeling vulnerable. What if you gave up control? You think you could be happier? Could there be less difficulty in your life? Would you be more relaxed and at ease? More in harmony with other people? So we'll end here.